Blog Talk Radio.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion, like how a single word can make a whole.
My mother said I wanted to be a chef when I was in the sixth grade. It's like what she said I told her. And it's not really a big, something that's really popular back in the, you know, 70s, than saying that you want to be a chef, because it's really not nothing exposed to you, you know, food-wise in the hood like that. So culinary school wasn't something that you kind of heard about. But my parents opened a barbecue restaurant when I was 14 in Compton, and it was called That Barbecue Place. it was pretty funny. And we used to go. My dad was always a good, you know, house barbecue guy. You know, friends would always come over. He's making ribs, making brisket. It's something he did all the time in the backyard. And when he wanted to open a barbecue restaurant, he went to this man named I just knew it was Mr. Jimmy. And we would go there. My dad, he was teaching my dad how to barbecue and different styles and stuff. My dad's from Compton also. And they would sit around, you know, playing dominoes and drinking Hennessy. And I would just sit there just watching all these old guys just talk a bunch of trash and tend their fire and do their barbecue. And that's pretty much how I learned how and got the kind of the bug for smoking meats and things like that. And once we opened up the restaurant and we had it for, I don't know, about 7-8 years, I stopped. I mean, my dad stopped, cooking after they closed it up, but I kept going, and I've worked with a lot of different chefs throughout my career, ones that would challenge me. Ones went to CIA culinary schools, different culinary schools, and I just went, I'm from the hard knocks. And I remember guys used to give me books to read, and if I quiz me while we're in the middle of service, and if I would get something, a question wrong, I have to do 10 push-ups right there on the line. And I better miss my tickets too. I better not fall behind on my food coming out. But I've had the fortunate opportunity to work with a lot of really cool chefs that when I first came out here to New York in the 2000s and stuff, I was working at the Mesa Grill under Bobby Flay. I've worked with Cheryl Smith, she's another Food Network, great Caribbean chef. She has a restaurant out in Brooklyn still. I was fortunate enough to become, I opened a barbecue food truck out in California called Slow Cow Barbecue years ago, and I did pretty well with my food truck. You know, the whole food truck phase and stuff going on, especially in California, is really huge. And then I moved my truck out to Vegas and kind of lost my shirt, like everyone else does in Vegas. But I wasn't gambling. I was gambling on the food truck.
Well, were you using ribs instead of chips?
With chips. but after doing that, I just cooked my way in. I became a banquet chef at the Mandalay Bay Hotel, feeding like 15 to 17,000 people at different parties. And then I became the executive chef of Yardbird inside the Venetian, and that was a really good propel for me with my career. It was a good stepping point for me in my career, being in Las Vegas, and a lot of great chefs and stuff are going through Vegas. And so now I just taking on New York and seeing what I can do out here. And it's been good so far.
Well, let me ask you, what do you think makes a great chef?
What makes a great chef, and I have a thing that's say passion over training. I've worked with guys that I've seen go to culinary schools, and they would come out and they would go work internships at restaurants and just would not continue. It has to be something that's inside of you. It's not something that you just can do a job. Being a chef is not a job. It's a lifestyle. And it has to be embedded into you. It has to be run through your veins. You have to get used to, it's not really actually, I shouldn't say getting used to, it just has to be that drive that you can stand on a line and cook for 10 hours and then, you continue to go on and you wake up and you do it again and you dream food and you think food. All the books you read are about food. You always perfect your craft every single day. And it's something that it just has to be inside of you. And you can't, chefs are born, they're not made. It's something that's a passion that's inside of you that just can't do anything else. We have other hobbies and things like that, but we always tend to going back to food. And I'm 50 years old, and I've been doing this since I was 14, and it's
wow.
All that I do. It's every book that I read has something to do with food. The things I watch on TV has to do with food. I kind of get my old little tattoo shows and stuff out and things like that. But at the end of the day, I'm watching food.
Which shows do you like to watch? You like to watch more of the competitions or?
Yeah, my favorite show is like Ink Masters. I watch that. Chopped and. I like the food, I like the cooking shows where people are going around and they're just trying out what people are doing. I have an idea for a show where it's just like, you know, Main Street America. Every little small town has a Main Street. And then there's a lot of these small towns. I was in Washington State, and it's Clarkston, Washington, and it's a really small town, but the food is so good. And these people, and it's all they support are just their locals. You know, it's that dying art of that ma and pa style restaurants. I don't go to corporate restaurants. I'd rather go to restaurants that, you know, there's somebody back there that's thinking and expressing themselves, and that's how I like to eat. My mother always said, "Don't eat angry food because it don't taste right."
I also announced I want to get into this whole thing. Oh, but by the way, have you been in any competitions on TV?
Yes, I've done a few. I was on Man vs. Child. It's a TV show that was on FYI channel. I did Late Night Chef Fight, which we actually started in Las Vegas. It was where chefs from the Strip would go out to a parking lot of we started a place called Tommy Rockers, and that chefs would come off the Strip. They would go into these food trucks and battle. And we called it Back of the House Brawl. But A&E picked it up when we were doing it. I'm telling you, this is like 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. We're in the parking lot, you know, drinking brews and battling each other on food trucks. And the winner would have to take the trophy, and they would add another element to the trophy. So it started off really small. Then it became like, you know, a 6-foot-tall trophy at the end of the season. But A&E picked it up, and it was called Late Night Chef Fight. I've also been on Cutthroat Kitchen, and I just recently did.
Oh, I remember
Chopped.
Cutthroat. That's still on.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Okay.
And I
seen
just
that in a while.
did Chopped, the Grillmasters Challenge, which is actually airing tomorrow.
Oh, that's the Chopped one, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well. How did you do on Cutthroat Kitchen?
Cutthroat Kitchen, I came in second, and it was
okay.
A rough one. Because I overturned my ice cream. It was a challenge. We had to make a Cherry's Jubilee, and the woman bought the sabotage for me to cook all of my dish inside a ball pit. You know those little balls, plastic balls. People jump into those little bins, and the kids play and all those colorful balls.
Yeah.
I had to cook in one of those where my cutting boards, my nut, everything, plating, everything inside this little ball pit. And, you know, sometimes you just have to go for it. And so I'm in there trying to, you know, I'm throwing the balls around, trying to get all my ingredients and stuff together. And I was wanting to make this cream, and I'm looking for this buttermilk, and I'm jumping back into the ball pit, and I stand up, and my knee landed on it. So I had this buttermilk just running down my leg.
Oh, God.
And I kind of just forgot about, you know, my ice cream that was churning in the ice cream machine. It only takes a couple of minutes. And so I think I feel that that's how I lost that one, because you said you should have just kept it off the plate. But, you know, you live and learn.
Yeah. How did it come about, even going on, you know, to be on Chopped?
Well, funny enough, I mean, all the shows that I've been on have been found me through social media, which has been really, really good. And this last Chopped one, they actually sent a letter out to my owners of my restaurant, and they sent it to me. And I just applied, and I was lucky and fortunate enough to get on the show.
Oh, okay. So what I want to know, we're not going to go into, you know, winning, losing, or anything.
Yeah, we can't do all that.
Right, I know. But what I'm curious about is, like, okay, so, like, how did you, like, prepare? I mean, you're going in there and... You're going to be, you know, opening up a basket.
Right.
So how do you
Well, there's
prepare.
Two ways you could, to prepare, kind of prepare for it, is I had my cooks for like 2 weeks. In the middle of service, they just give me a basket. Say, go cook something. And the bartenders, they are coming up with the weirdest stuff. And a lot of them didn't taste very good. but they would just challenge me to get me ready for the timing part of it and making sure that I could finish the dish in a lot of time. But what I found when I was doing, because I cook every day, so I was always going too fast. So because I'm in my kitchen, I know where everything is too. It's kind of easy to go grab something because you know where everything is.
Yeah.
But I was going too fast. So what that did for when I was ready, getting ready for Chopped, when I got there, I would remember to slow down and kind of really think something out, because yeah, you say 20 minutes and a half hour is a quick amount of time, but like if you know where things are and what you're in your focus, it's that's too much time. Because we cook in a restaurant, you want to get things out, you know, in 15 minutes. You know, but you know, my restaurants, we go to 30 minutes, you know, sometimes because we're just really, really busy. But when you start a project, when you start a plate, it shouldn't take you that long to get something produced, unless you're frying chicken. That's, you know, it's 15, 20 minutes.
Oh,
right. But it's that's how I kind of got practice doing that. And you kind of always want to have something in your head too, like you have a Rolodex of recipes in your head, so sometimes you just got to grab one of those and just whatever they give you, you kind of turn it into that, you know, because you kind of you've always done it before, you know?
Right. So basically, like, you're seeing a protein, and if it's, you know, like chicken, you'll have ideas, or pork, or, you know, things like that,
right.
You know,
right.
of how you would kind of season it anyway, kind of thing, your
exactly.
favorite way.
Exactly.
And then
I was doing, you know, Grill Masters, so you always want to, you know, representing Memphis style barbecue, and I always wanted to make sure that flavor came across with everything that I did.
Well, because you're doing grilling, it's a whole different thing than if you're grilling indoors than outdoors, right?
Oh yeah, it is. And grilling is different from barbecue. And there's barbecuing, which is, you know, barbecue, and then there's grilling. And this is a Grill Masters challenge that we did, and we had to do everything on a grill. No ovens, no. We had one, you know, burner with a saute pan, but everything had to be done on the grill. I mean, it's a grill challenge. You got to be a grill master.
Wow. Okay. Now we're going to get into the thing about your bacon.
Oh, now we're going to talk about bacon? Well,
that's
a lovely subject for me. I think I have three.
Most
three
places don't
bacon on my
make
body.
Their own bacon. Yeah, most places don't make their own bacon.
Yeah.
So I want to get into this. So, what prompted you to say, you know, I want to have my own bacon here?
Well, I have a smoker. I have a space to brine some bellies. Why not? That's to be the best question of why shouldn't I do it? Because I have all the tools to make a really good bacon. So I want to really explore that and really just dive into coming up with a really unique and creative, you know, piece of bacon. I mean, bacon, everyone said you put bacon on everything. You put bacon on everything, it's going to be great. But all bacon's not good. You know, some bacons are saltier than others.
Yeah.
Some bacons are sweeter than I can't stand that maple bacon. Oh my goodness, it feels like it has, you know, maple syrup throughout my brain as when I'm eating it. It's just too sweet. So I want to come up with something that was just a really nice, clean piece of meat. And if I can't make it, I really don't want to sell it. I mean, I will never do turkey bacon. It's just like there's no such thing. You know, there's no turkeys don't have bellies. I mean, so, you know, it always has to be. I mean, it's overly processed. If you look at the turkey bacon. And there's people out there that really do, you know, that like it. And you guys go ahead and continue to eat it. But for me, it's just something that is not a product that is real. So I don't like to do a whole lot of processed food. So if I can take a pork belly, you know, brine it for a few days, smoke it for a few hours, then I let it sit and I let it, you know, dry in my cooler for a couple more days, I've come up with a good formula to make a good piece of bacon. And it, I know what's in it. There's no question. There's no, you know, is that in there? Is that it? I know what's in this bacon. It's completely clean. It's a pork belly that's been cured with salt and sugars and like aromatic spices like cinnamon, nutmeg, cloves, coriander, black pepper. And I let that sit there and just absorb those flavors for, you know, amount of time to where it becomes its best salty, spicy sweetness. Then I rub it down with black pepper with a nice coating and stuff on there. And I put it in a smoker with oak wood for about 3 hours and just let the smoke just cook through that piece of belly. And then when it comes off and you chill it, and you slice in your slicer nice and thick, and you render off some of the more of the fat of that bacon, you know, fat that's just, oh man, you put that in your, if you are you raised with that can of bacon fat on your stove, you know, that's what I have.
Yeah.
I think I have like 3 gallons right now just sitting there in the cooler because you know, I was raised on that coffee tin with that bacon drippings right there on the corner on the stove where you season, you know, your grits with it or your saute your green beans or something, or put it in your collard greens, or saute your onions. I know what's in it. And if you cannot tell the passion I have for what I do right now, I'm sorry, you just don't get it. But that's a good piece of bacon.
Excuse me while I take a napkin and wipe the drool off of the left side of my mouth. And, I am a bacon fan.
Oh, man.
As I told you, it's hard. And I don't know what it is about. I think it's also the texture
mm-hmm.
of bacon that I also like, because the way I have to have it, it's like it can't be totally well done. I have to have, in other words, at least the fat has to be like crunchy though.
Right. So,
you know,
so
not
I,
crunchy,
I
but a little bit. You know what I mean?
Right, I understand. You're one of those well-done, crispy bacon people. I understand that.
Yeah.
And those are people, I put those in the oven. I'll cook that up. I like mine a little less cooked than that because I like to, so I cook mine with, I make mine with the rind on there, that chicharron.
Oh, yeah.
Put it in the oven, it'll start getting all crispy, like a nice crunch to it. But the meat of the bacon, you want to have it meaty and you intend it.
Yeah.
Yes, you can render off the fat part of it, but then, you know, I love that part of it, the bacon. But that's why I do make my own, because I can see the layers of it where, you know, the fat caps and stuff of how much fat was on, you know, that pig but when you cook it too much, you cook all that love out of it, and that's
yeah.
that's one thing that, you know, people want crispy bacon because they're so used to having crap bacon. So
yeah, I know
bacon
what you told, yeah.
is not good, then you can have then you, yeah cook it to death. When you have something that is a piece of, you know, piece of meat that's at that belly, and all the time and energy and love is gone to produce this. You want to taste it, and what happens is when you're rendering off that fat of the bacon and you're rendering it off and you create your bacon drippings. That's all flavor that you're saving. And my biggest thing is I lose it in my kitchen when my cooks like throw my bacon in my fryer to make it. People want it crispy. They throw it in the fryer. I go no. Don't do that, because that's what all you're doing is you're pulling out all the flavor. So all you're having is crunchy belly. There's no flavor in it. So the key thing to do is put it on, you know, your sheet pan, put it in your oven, and let it just sit there, and it fries in its own juices to where you can get it crispy. Because it's going to retain some of that flavor. If you're doing it and you're putting it into another type of oil that's pulling out all of the flavor of it, all you're having is crispy meat. You're not having bacon. You're just having a crispy piece of belly. And you do it in the oven.
And you're also combining another fat. Because
you're buying another fat as well.
An oil.
Exactly. But if you put your bacon on a sheet pan, put it in your oven, and let it just sit there, and it's cooking in its own juices, and it's getting crispy the way you like it, you're going to taste it. And one other way I do it, when I do my candy bake, I do it on top of a sheet pan. Because I want it to get crispy, but I don't want it to fry. I want it to just kind of like cook and let the oils render off of the fat, you know, by itself, so then the sugars on top, you know, crisp up and makes my candy bacon. Well, we can go on for hours. This is a short show, right?
what is it, the oddest recipes you've made with bacon?
Oh wow. Oddest things.
Well, in other words, somebody would say, you put bacon in that?
Well, the fuck? One thing that I done, when I was in Las Vegas for a while, I did a little consulting for a place called Bacon Bar. And, man, it was right down my alley. And I created this sauce like a dipping sauce. I made some beignets one day, and it was bacon beignets, you know, the New Orleans donut with the powdered sugar and all that stuff on there.
Uh-huh.
So I made the beignets.
I have to take the napkin and do my right side. My okay. I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. Let's get back to this.
There's two things here. Like you're gonna think I'm absolutely insane. But I made the beignets and I put the crumbled bacon on top with the powdered sugar. But it was like, that's good. It's good. It's bacon. It's dry. You know, it's a donut with bacon on it. Okay, it's dry. So I took some of the I collect, you know, bacon drippings. So I took some bacon drippings one day and I melted it down. I added powdered sugar to it and just a touch of cinnamon and a little bit of vanilla, sweet bacon glaze. And the oils from the bacon fat would coat your mouth when you dip the beignet into the sauce and bit into it, that the oils coated your mouth and you taste the bacon, and then you tap that sweet come right behind it like, It was like, whoa, what is this? And that's a really good sauce. But the most weird thing, I thought it was actually brilliant, but it was, people said it was kind of, you know, pushing the envelope. I started brunch and I'm doing Eggs Benedict with bacon instead of Canadian bacon. I used like my fairly thick cut bacon. And, you know, basic holidays, egg yolks and what? Butter, right? Hot butter.
Yeah.
Well, I took the egg yolks and I did sort of hot butter. I had to use hot bacon fat. And I cooked, I made the hollandaise with the hot bacon fat and then a pinch of cayenne pepper, a little, no salt. And I put some herbs in there, too. So instead of using the butter as my oil for the hollandaise. I used the hot bacon fat for it, and that's what cooked up my eggs and made this beautiful, beautiful bacon-flavored hollandaise sauce that I think it's amazing. I think I'm actually going to do that this weekend. That was a good one.
Well, you know, there's a I was looking up recipes. I do a lot of cooking in my hands. All my friends mm-hmm. keep saying to me, "But you mean you cook for yourself?" I'm going, "Of course I'm going to cook for myself. I don't like I go into the kitchen and like I'm you know I'm gourmet cook. It's like my brain says if I'm going to go out to eat, what would I want?" Well, I figured it out. I'll cook it at home, you know. So I tend to do that. But as when looking up, just what I tend to do is I'd never go by recipes, which mm-hmm. is why I can't bake, by the way. Because baking is a science, you know. It doesn't work out. But other than that, what I tend to do is I'll look to see it's like ingredients. I'll say, oh, okay,
right.
That's what goes into it. But
right.
one of the things I had found some years ago, I was looking at foods from Native American foods.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them happened to be, it turned out delicious, for breakfast, to have bacon and apples with cinnamon. And I said, I got to try this.
Right
oh, it's so
that
good.
Goes, that goes perfectly together. It's perfect.
Oh, it's
that,
so
is
good.
That,
that's
so
what,
that,
when
that
you...
Is that where the apple stuck in that pig's mouth comes from?
I guess maybe. That's a possibility,
I do this thing with also with bacon drippings. I make a bacon powder. You take a tapioca amount of dextrose as a powdering substance that changes oils into solids. And so I would make this bacon fat powder. And I would sprinkle it on. I used to sprinkle it on different types of like breads and things like that, just to add a bacon flavor to it. But like I said, but what happens with that powder? When as soon as it touches moisture, it melts, so you get that bacon, you know, drippings flavor, you know, whatever you put it in. It's fun. I try to. There's no limits. I mean, my tattoo across my chest says "taste like bacon." I'm in this for the long haul. I do a lot of things with bacon.
How much now? Like, let's say, you know, per week or whatever. Per week, how much bacon winds up being used at the restaurant that you have to, you know?
I go through about I think it's like up to 45 pounds a week right now.
Wow. Do you get people do you get people that come in and say, "Listen, can I like just buy a pound of bacon to take?"
Not yet. Hopefully that will come up soon. I think the one thing that we have to really get out there is that we do make it in-house, and it's completely from scratch. And once that really gets known, the people will come in and really, you know, enjoy our bacon a little bit more. Right now, we're still on the cusp of everyone really knowing that what we do in this restaurant, from every pickle that we make, every burger that we grind, every sausage that we make, and our bacon that we make, it's done from scratch and with love and right in this building.
Wait, I have to get a napkin. Now it's coming out of both sides of my mouth. Drooling is coming out of... well, I'll find out tomorrow, I guess. Anyway, so now I also want to ask to talk to you a little bit about this event, another event that's coming up, Bacon and Beer Festival at the USPA.
Bacon and beer. Yeah.
Well, I understand you can't use your own bacon, though.
Yeah, I know. So I have to figure out how to manipulate it some other way. But I can't use my own bacon. Yeah, it has to have an even playing field. So it's going to be sponsored.
Yeah.
And so we'll get the bacon that's sponsored, and then I will, you know, put some love to it as much as I possibly can. I got quite a few ideas, though.
Did you get involved in that because of the bacon? I mean, they were hunting for restaurants that, you know, specialize in bacon?
They asked me to do it, and I, you know, they, you just said the two magic words, and, you know, bacon and beer, so I'm all in, no matter what. But yeah, they came to us and asked us to be in, and of course I'm going to do it.
Do you have any ideas, like, of what you're going to serve, or are you asked to, like, serve one particular dish?
You're asked to put one of your dishes up. I mean, you they leave it up to you. You don't have, they don't tell you what to make.
Okay.
They leave it up to you. So I'm trying to come up with something that's pretty different. I beer braised a piece of bacon slab for about 6 hours last week. So I want to do like a beer braised bacon slider, and I glazed it with some miso. And it came out too salty, so my first one scratched. So now I'm back to the drawing board again for my next my next one.
Okay. Well, I think we have till the end of September, I believe, right?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah. Okay.
But I want to get leave something that's completely different. You know, I mean, who puts sweet miso glaze on a piece of bacon? I tried. I think that's the reason why no one does it, because it didn't come out very well.
Do you have you done your own like bacon and beer tests, like to see, oh, this beer goes with this one doesn't, or things like that?
That's what we're working on. We're trying to pair up some stuff now, but it really depends on the flavor I'm going to take with the dish. I'm really thinking about going really sweet with this one, so kind of that sweet saltiness, and then whatever beer that we want to go with it will, complement it. But I'm really wanting to go that route because I know a lot of people are going to go really savory and salty, so I want our dish to really stand out. So I'm trying to come up with a really good salty element to what we bring to the event.
Do you have your own like favorite beer that you like to cook with? I mean,
I cook Southern food, so I always reach for a PBR first. So that's like my staple for cooking with beer. But I've been venturing on to a couple of porters and things like that we're using. A lot of amber beers that we're looking at that we use right now for, I think, a beer gravy. But I'm a old school, PBR, Pabst Blue Ribbon kind of guy, From
so
beer batters to shrimp and grits and all that kind of stuff. I kind of go with that one.
So you're cooking Southern food there? I can't begin to tell you. I can't begin to tell you how much I've been looking for a place of Southern. Okay, when they said, because I see something that said soul food, and I don't know why,
right,
all of a sudden soul food got to be jerk chicken gets into it or something else, and I'm going, that's not the food that my friends make when they make it, and
soul
I can't,
food.
In Queens, I can't find a place.
Well, soul food is just, it's the food that we done in the South, and we use it for a lot of celebrations because Black folks didn't have a lot of money back in the South, so they use food. I mean, we still do it to this day. When somebody has a birth, what do? We bring them food. Somebody dies, we bring food. For birthday, we bring food. It's like we use food for celebration, so it's giving part of our soul to them. I tell people, when you taste my food, you taste my heart. So we're giving, I give my heart with every plate that I put on. So it's an expression of self. Soul food is really, it's Southern food. I mean, it's derived in the South. So we do everything here from, fried. We have Sunday supper here at night at the restaurant where it's fried chicken. It's sauteed green beans, biscuits, with our special butters, and fingering potatoes. So it brings that whole Sunday supper, sitting down with everybody at the table type of vibe. We do, you know, catfish and grits for brunch with a Creole sauce. You know, and so I'm a Southern chef. I mean, I cook everything that, you know, that's Southern. I've kind of tried to master my cuisine, and it's soul food. And you found a place to come eat it now.
I can't believe, you know, I've had discussions with people. There was, as a matter of fact, what happened was, like, because you'd think with all the restaurants in Queens,
mm-hmm.
with all the ethnic food, there would be
right.
some places. And I had gone to one place some years ago that was in, it's sort of Jamaica. It was across the street, I think, from Baisley Park, I believe, or something. Well, this guy had this restaurant. It was because the only place that's, I think, that's even around is one of the places, you know, you go in there and the steam tables are, you know, what kind of thing, you know, which is not
right.
You know,
right.
But this guy had a place. It was like, you know, dining. And he used
mm-hmm.
to, and the food was absolutely fabulous. And then, I don't know, that went out of business. And it was like, so where do I get it? I mean, I don't want to travel
well,
into Manhattan.
You better come over here and get you some collard greens.
Well, now I know
you're
going to get more publicity than you probably ever thought. I mean, you know, because one of the things that I will not make, I can't, collard greens, because they're too
what?
Bitter.
They're
no
too
matter
bitter.
What I do, but. When uh-huh. I have one of my friends that makes collard greens, it's fine, you know.
Yeah, you gotta cook them, and we use a little
vinegar.
Yeah,
you got to know how to
vinegar.
Yeah, it's
sugar and butter. Those are the things that I use that
uh-huh.
that cuts that out. I find mustard greens a bit more bitter than collards are, but I was raised on collards, turnips, and mustard greens. My grandma used to make them all, so. You gotta cook them, but we can't. You don't cook them to death. You gotta still have some kind of, you know, fiber into them. But, you know, we stew them down. You add your I do a little vinegar in there, a little sugar, a little butter, and then what you do is when you're washing your greens, you take you have them in the water, and you take the greens out, you put them in your pot from the water, and that's your liquid. So it kind of steams in itself, and it creates its own liquor. We call it pot liquor, right? So it creates its own pot liquor. I remember first time I made collard greens for my grandmother and my aunt and her cousin. I was in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We was having a family reunion, and I'm like, oh, I make collard greens. I make them every day. So I get on up there, chest all stuck out. I start doing the greens, and these old women looked at me. I was like, boy, what the hell are you doing? Because I was putting water in the pot. And they go, no, boy, you don't do it like that. So these ladies started showing me how to properly make collard greens. And I do the exact same thing to this day. Because they talk so much mess to me. Like, you know, I'm the new, you and them chefy boys, right? So I learned how to cook down home, you know. And I remember picking greens. My grandma this is in California. My grandma left Mississippi and went to San Diego in 1954. And so I remember they call them tree collards. So it was like the collard greens that grew up on a stalk. And she would go out in the morning, and she would pick her greens for the day that she was going to make for dinner, just a handful, just her and my grandfather. She would just did a little bit of them. But she'd do it in the morning before the sun hit them, because when the sun hit it, it made the greens tough. So you had to do them early in the morning to pick them before the sun got to them. And she would sit there, and she would open up her a brown paper bag, and she was sitting on the floor. I was shucking the black eyed peas from the shell, and she'd be in the kitchen, you know, cutting up her collard greens and letting them wash and soak them for a while. So that's what, and that's what I think we need to get back to that. We need to have grandmothers cooking for us again. And we're the new grandmothers that are cooking and for the kids, and they see it, and the kids are not just having all this processed McDonald's. We're grandma's cooking. The name of my company, I have a company that I do my barbecue sauce with. It's called Grandma Hands. Because you got to lay grandma hands on it. You know, you got to lay grandma hands on your food. Because if you can't cook it for your grandma, she won't eat it. You know, it ain't worth selling.
Nah. Right, do you know who Jimmy Heath is?
Yeah, I guess, right? Huh?
Do you know who Jimmy Heath is? Are you familiar with him?
Uh-uh.
Jimmy Heath. He's a, he runs a jazz orchestra, I guess. He's like 91 years old.
Uh-huh.
And he had to, went to that concert that he had at Town Hall. So I did an interview with him, and we were talking about trying to find, he lives in Corona, so we were talking about trying to find a Southern restaurant. So now I'm going to get a hold of this guy and let him know. I got all the people who I've complained to that I now have to call.
Yep. Let me know what you
really
need.
Good. So tomorrow you're going to have this viewing party.
Yes.
Okay. What should we? Other than watching this show, what should we expect? And how, you know, are people? You want people just walking in? Do they have to call? Do they have to register? What?
Well, you can call, make a reservation. We're filling up. A lot of people are coming out to watch the show. And then we just come in and have standing room only, and we'll just hang out. DJ starts about 8 o'clock. You know, come in, grab a cocktail, and, you know, grab a seat, get comfortable, and get ready for a show. And it's going to be the show starts at 9, and we're just going to be having, you know, a lot of family and friends and, you know, regular customers that come through, and we're just going to come out here and just enjoy watching the show. See how I do.
Do I need to make a reservation? Or you ever have? Or you already have one for me?
I already have one for you. I made your reservation when we talked the other day.
Oh, okay. Good. I don't want to miss this. You know.
Awesome.
This is. Yeah. Do we get to taste your bacon?
I might have a few things rolling around tomorrow.
Okay.
There'll be a few things that are probably trade past tomorrow.
Okay, that's really great. Yeah, I'm curious. Like, well, obviously we know you were in the first round, right? What was your when you opened up
round.
The basket, just looking at it, you know, like you're opening up this basket and you're looking at the stuff there. Did anything in your brain go like, what the hell? Are you kidding?
It did, definitely. I'm like, what am I going to do with this? And you just got to go for it.
Everybody,
the key thing is taste everything.
Right, that's true. That's what, I try to watch to see if they're tasting it. No, or if they're tasting it and using the same spoon again. I've seen that before.
That's funny.
They commented on it. You know, but that's really good. Has it prompted you, like, after doing this, to say, might be something I'd like to make in my restaurant?
You know, honestly, to tell you the truth, we did it so long ago, I don't remember the dishes.
Oh.
So I'm really curious to see, like, what happened, because I I just really don't. I don't remember the ingredients. So it's going to be the first time for me again as well.
So when, in terms of when they're taping this, they're taping this like several months before?
Yeah, it's been a while.
Wow, so, and this is like going to be like the first time you get to see the show itself, like how it
finally appears. Exactly. That's why I'm so excited. Because I don't remember what I cooked.
This is going to be a hoot. I'm bringing my camera to take photos, but I'm also going to, the camera has capacity for video. So I want to get, if you don't mind, like pictures, especially like of people's reactions, you know, and stuff like that. You know.
Awesome. Sounds good.
I like the Facebook the things that I do, you know. I think this is going to be such a hoot. I am so looking forward to this. Regardless of the outcome, this is all going to be a hoot. That's what, you know.
I hope it helps us bring some more, you know, folks out here to Forest Hills too, and Forest Hills, Queens, and
to Forest Hills. The fact that you're telling, especially just, you know, knowing that here's a place that has Southern cooking in Queens,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, needs to get out there. I have a great thing for being able to get information out there.
Well, good. That's why we're doing this.
Okay. After we finish the show, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be able to, like, send you the link to this show.
Alrighty.
And you're welcome to use it for, you know, your website or whatever you want for people to listen to this.
Awesome.
Okay?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Well, I thank you. Well, thank you so much. I got to.
And I'll probably
cooking.
Thank you tomorrow.
I got to go tend to my smoker right now. So,
okay.
So I will see you tomorrow.
Yeah, you got it. Have a great day today.
You too. Have a good one. Try to stay dry in all this rain. Got
yes,
out here.
I will. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. You have a good one.
Bye, Boots.
Right. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah. That's, I am really so looking forward to this. Yeah. Well, I'm not going to even play. Well, brownies and bacon, I don't think so. I don't think brownies and bacon will go good. So I'm just going to end the show. No commercial. Let's see where we have here. My music introduction. Okay, everybody, have a great morning, afternoon, evening, whenever it is you're listening to this. Yes. Now, again, that was Chef Melvin Boots Johnson from Queens,